leader!
Order, order.
The House resumed on Tuesday after a fortnight's adjournment, with John Key's National-led minority government having finally signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and able to report its first operating surplus since taking over the Treasury benches 7 years ago. Triumphant government ministers keen to extract maximum political capital out of the good news, sceptical opposition parties equally as eager to deny them the satisfaction. While the front benches took up slings and arrows in the debating chamber, the committee room saw the Health Committee start its inquiry into public attitudes towards euthanasia, while the Government Administration Committee began hearing submissions on the members' bill from Labour's Sue Moroney, extending paid parental leave to 26 weeks. With a complicated history, this bill was sent to the committee after passing its first reading last month by the slimmest of margins, 61-60, supported by all parties except National and ACT, while the three votes of the other two government allies, the Maori Party and United Futures' Peter Dunn, gave the bill its winning margin. That same scenario, with the Maori Party and the MP for the Wellington seat of Ohariu joining all other parties to defeat National and ACT, occurred again on Wednesday night, pushing two more Labour Party members' bills through to the committee rooms, while two other bills failed, one lacking support from Peter Dunn, but not the Maori Party, going down by 62-59, and the other failing by 61-60, after Mr Dunn crossed back to join National and ACT member for Epsom, David Seymour, who consistently voted with National. The four vacancies that created on the members' order paper were filled the next day by bills drawn from the 75 in the ballot. Three of them were from Labour MPs and one, like Sue Moroney's parental leave bill, was on its second time around, after also being stalled by a 60-60 dead heat vote earlier this year, when National was one down after the resignation of its Northland MP, Mike Sabin. His seat was then taken in a by-election won by New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters, and that critical vote moved back across the chamber to restore the opposition's potential for a majority of 61 that they had in the last Parliament. Originally in the name of Labour's housing spokesman Phil Twyford, the Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill, aimed at ensuring that every rental home meets the minimum standards of heating and insulation, went back in the ballot under the name of the Labour Party leader Andrew Little. It became one of the lucky four drawn on Thursday. But unlike Sue Moroney's bill, the changes that had been made to it were not judged to be sufficient to get around the rule barring bills that are substantially the same as bills that have already been defeated in the same calendar year. It was referred to the Speaker, David Carter, who delivered his judgment on it before question time on Thursday.
In my opinion, this bill should never have been accepted for the ballot. I have asked the clerk to ensure that bills proposed to go on the ballot are scrutinised more carefully for compliance with Standing Order 264. In future, bills that are the same in substance as ones read or defeated in the same calendar year will not be permitted into the ballot.
Saying that Mr Carter's ruling was without precedent, Labour's Chief Whip Chris Hipkins argued that the bill should have been challenged in the 4 months before it was drawn from the ballot, and that it had only been entered after advice had been sought from the clerk's office.
And was assured that in fact this bill met standing orders. Members of this House must be able to have confidence that the advice they receive from the clerk's office is in fact accurate. I therefore ask, Mr Speaker, that you withdraw the ruling pending further consideration of the matter by either the Standing Orders Committee or the Business Committee.
But Mr Carter said he'd already given it considerable thought.
The member's very first point is right. This is the first time that this has ever happened. But I made the point that in my mind this bill should never have been accepted. If advice was given that it was acceptable, I don't accept that that advice was right. Mistakes do happen. I therefore needed to chart a way forward subsequent to the bill being drawn out of the ballot. And I think I have very fairly found a mechanism for that to move forward.
And that is, if the bill comes up for its first reading on one of the 3 members' days remaining in 2015, it will be ruled out of order. Otherwise, it will be in a new calendar year and therefore free to proceed.
I expect far more scrutiny to take place from the clerk and his staff before bills are accepted into the ballot in the first place. I think we are creating history here. I hope we don't have an opportunity to see it repeated, but I think I've given a very fair way forward for this particular case, and I don't intend to review the decision at all.
And those weren't the only stern words from the Speaker this week. Mr Carter also tore a strip off the Minister of Health after Jonathan Coleman defied him by repeating a claim that his Labour shadow, Annette King, was making things up.
I'm very tempted to be asking the Minister to leave this chamber. It's becoming a bit of a habit of this Minister to continue to create disorder in this House. On this occasion, he can stay, but if it happens again, my patience will not last very long with this particular Minister, and that is the last warning I will be giving the Honourable Dr Jonathan Coleman.
The Minister had been quizzed by Mrs King on the impact of the TPPA on the health budget, one of many questions from a sceptical opposition that drew scorn from National's Melissa Lee.
Shame on the opposition for opposing, what it seems like it's an opposition to free trade agreements. And I'm believing that they will probably come to party and say yes and celebrate the TPP as well.
But Labour's David Parker said the opposition were only doing their job.
There have been some intemperate comments coming from the National Party in the last week. They've tried to criticise Annette King and the Labour Party for asking questions that the opposition parties ought to be asking, which is, what is the underlying effect on things like Pharmac?
David Parker was speaking in Wednesday's general debate, which opened with this from Finance Minister Bill English.
Well, Mr Speaker, it's been a great week for New Zealand and a terrible week for the Labour Party, because New Zealand got the TPP and a surplus, and the Labour Party got the best advice Grant Robertson could give them.
Labour's finance spokesman, Grant Robertson, meanwhile tried to rub some of the gloss off the Minister's first operating surplus with questions like this one from Mr English on Wednesday.
When John Key was giving him a high five for achieving a $414 million surplus, did he tell him that it wouldn't have happened if he hadn't cut $444 million from the projection for Canterbury EQC payouts?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr Speaker, no, because the member's just wrong. I mean, he can go on an Easter egg hunt where he finds every accounting adjustment that exists that's around $400 million, but it'll just make him look like a little bunny.
Supplementary question, Mr Speaker.
Order. Grant Robertson.
Does he think the people of Canterbury will be wanting to give him a high five when they hear that he got his surplus by cutting money from their already inadequate budget for EQC earthquake repairs?
The Honourable Bill English.
Mr Speaker, I think they'd probably intuitively grasp the way the government finances work a bit better than the member. And actually, people all over Christchurch high-five the Minister for Earthquakes because he's overseen the repair of 400,000 insurance claims, the rebuilding of thousands of new homes, the planning and the revival of the Central Business District. And many people in Christchurch are pretty pleased with the government's $15 billion contribution to the rebuilding of their city.
Finance Minister Bill English. Now from the Chamber to the committee rooms, where Rhys Lyon reports on the first day of the Health Committee's inquiry into euthanasia.
The Health Committee's inquiry into public attitudes towards medically assisted dying or euthanasia began on Wednesday when former Labour MP Marion Street, whose petition on euthanasia sparked off the inquiry, appeared before the committee and explained why it was needed.
I spent 3 years as a Member of Parliament going around the country talking to people about this issue. And it seems to me that the nervousness that MPs generally seem to hold with respect to debating this issue, declaring themselves on this issue, promoting legislation on this issue, comes from a lack of awareness of how very popular it is, how very much needed it is.
Ms Street sought to explain the reasons for those seeking end-of-life choice.
They wish that having been self-determining, autonomous adults in their lifetime, they would like to be self-determining, autonomous adults at their end time. And that is as simple as it gets.
Former Labour MP Marion Street presenting that evidence to the Health Committee's inquiry into euthanasia, and submissions on that inquiry are open until February 1st next year. Elsewhere on Wednesday, Labor's Sue Moroney presented her bill calling for an extension to paid parental leave from 18 to 26 weeks. Ms. Moroney said the bill was similar to a previous bill in her name, which failed to pass its final reading earlier this year, though this one introduced provisions around work contact hours.
The idea with work contact hours is that parents who are on paid parental leave can come back and do a small and limited amount of paid work that, in my mind, is likely to be training opportunities that they will be paid to undertake during the course of that 6 months and not lose their entitlement to 6 months paid parental leave.
And Ms. Moroney pointed to support for her bill from one particular member of the public gallery.
This baby who I've just met is 5.5 months old. We have a 5.5 month old baby in the room with us. And you can see the level of interaction that's happening right before your eyes. And this interaction is starting to make a real difference between the period of paid leave that we have in place now, which is heading towards 18 weeks, and the 26 weeks period.
Labor's Sue Moroney presenting her parental leave and employment protection, 6 months paid leave and work contact hours amendment bill to the Government Administration Committee. And submissions on that bill are open until November the 6th. Also this week, on Thursday, public law specialist May Chen was up before the Justice and Electoral Committee to make a submission on its inquiry into last year's election and outlined research she had done into low voter turnout among new migrants to New Zealand.
New fresh migrants take 4 elections to vote. And the reason is because in the first election, they don't know what's going on. They just know that there's a thing called a general election and everyone's rushing around. So by the time they learn English, particularly if they come from a really different culture, get a job, sort their kids out, learn to buy food. You know, I mean, it takes a while.
And May Chen suggested another cause of voter apathy amongst some migrants.
The fact that they also come from source countries where government's not really serious, it's not really a free election, has an impact on them. It's because when you say to a person like that, your vote counts, they say, well, why does it? It's never counted back home. And then, of course, you've got the problems of no habit of voting. And so with many of these people, you're starting from scratch to develop the habit of voting. You can see that new migrants, particularly if they come from very different cultures where they don't speak the language, really are struggling.
Ms. Chen suggested a way to improve voter turnout among migrants.
To make sure that you're educated about the history and the culture, about the importance of the treaty, about the Indigenous peoples, about how our system of government works. A lot of the time I'm spending time with migrants saying, look, you need to get involved. Why aren't you getting involved in central local government? Why aren't you having their say? And they say, well, we don't speak very good English. We have no understanding of the system. We don't think it makes any difference. So we're just focused on our own rice bowl. Well, that's not good for New Zealand.
Public law specialist May Chen with that submission to the Justice and Electoral Committee's inquiry into the 2014 election. All up, there were 15 committee meetings held during the week. Also this week, the Environment Canterbury Transitional Governance Arrangements Bill, which would establish a mixed model governance structure for the Canterbury Regional Council, passed its first reading in the House and was sent off to the Local Government and Environment Committee. The only government support party to vote against that bill was Peter Dunn's United Future, though Mr Dunn himself, as Internal Affairs Minister, saw 2 bills in his name pass their final readings on Thursday afternoon. The first was a bill that, as Mr Dunn explained, would extend the validity period for New Zealand passports from 5 to 10 years.
That longer validity period will benefit adult New Zealand travellers who will need to renew their passports less often. And also, the fee for 1 10-year passport will be substantially less than the fee for 2 5-year passports. Now, this change alone has made the Passports Amendment Bill No. 2 a very popular bill.
And that was evident when the bill later passed its final reading unopposed. Next up was the final reading of a bill that updates laws regarding pokie machines, a debate also kicked off by Mr Dunn.
The background to this bill is actually the members' bill that was sponsored by the Honourable Tuara Flavel, which became the Gambling Harm Reduction Amendment Act 2013. The Flavel bill, as it was colloquially known, attracted a very large number of submitters that raised a wide range of issues with the current framework for gambling operations in pubs and clubs. Views were expressed that parts of the framework for controlling this type of gambling were not perceived to be working particularly well. So this bill responds to some of those concerns and also simplifies some aspects of regulating the sector.
And the Gambling Amendment Bill No. 3 later passed its final reading by 93 votes to 28, supported by National, Labour, ACT and United Future, but opposed by the Greens, Māori Party and New Zealand First. That was followed by the third reading of a bill that updates standards and accreditation laws. That bill passing with minutes to spare before the House adjourned for the week, supported by National, ACT and United Future, but opposed by all other parties.
That report from Rhys Lyon. More details from our website, parliamenttoday.co.nz. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.